Hey, what's up, buddy? Latest episode of that SEC podcast back for another Barley Monday. You look like you're losing weight, man. How are you doing?
Down 20.
Wow.
Well, it's like 20. I think last week I said 20, it was 18. Now it's 20. So,
man,
good to be here.
So our zip it works. All right. Oh, it's going well. I think I've gained 20, so we're evened out. You know what?
Hell yeah, brother. Oh no, frozen.
No, I was just joking. So I titled this one "The SEC Goes to Court." What about it? Let's start with old Trinidad. Should he be able to play? I don't think there's any shot in hell he doesn't now, but.
Yeah,
I don't know how popular that is in the state now you reside, LSU, even though they were balls deep in wanting him about a month ago.
Yeah, no one here cares as much. What's up, Emily Powell? What's up, guys? No one really here cares as much. I will tell you, me and a coworker watched the trial at the office because it was fucking hysterical. Let me start by saying this because I don't want Ole Miss fans to be even more mad at me than they usually get. I'm so glad that Trinidad Chambliss is playing. I think that's awesome. I think it's good for college football. I think it'll be a lot of fun. For college football fans, I don't have an opinion on weighing in on, like, should he be eligible? I don't give a fuck about his tonsils. I will just say from an objective standpoint, this didn't seem to be a pressing matter in 2023, 2024, 2025. It was a very pressing matter now that he was offered between $4 to $6 million to play college football this year. And it, like, listen, this is the kind of story I want to see in NIL. And so, like, a guy that was brought in the summer, given, I think it was $400,000 or maybe it was $600,000 to be the backup. Like, by all means, he was going to be the backup quarterback at Ole Miss. I have something in my eye. And that's an incredible story. To watch that turn into, well, we're suing the NCAA, even though they denied him five times, and say, well, it's irreparable harm because he was going to make $5 million here, and now he's not going to make it in the NFL. And so, well, he's making $5 million because you guys gave him $5 million. And then the people that are defending him have a lot of interest in that, I'm sure, because they're Ole Miss people. I will say this. Like, again, I think it's great for fans. It's a treat to watch Trinidad Chambliss play football whenever he's playing football. I'm excited to watch him play football this upcoming year. I think it'll be great for Pete Golding in his first year, all that. So I've said enough nice things, right?
Cheat Golding, please call him by his real name on here.
I will not do that. Watching a grown-ass man in the courtroom, the judge, cry over his own decision was fucking hysterical. I mean, like, that whole part to me was such a joke that we were like, oh my gosh, like what a hero this. I mean, what did you think was going to happen? You held this court case in bumblefuck nowhere. They were pretending to be mad at the NCAA to be like, oh, they left early to go to another court case. Yeah, they did. Pardon the NCAA, billion-dollar organization sending these high-profile lawyers down to bumblefuck nowhere, Mississippi, to watch, you know, My Cousin Vinny 2.0 happen all over again, and some Ole Miss fan and judge say, it's in all best interest with Trinidad Chambliss. Like, what the fuck ever he was. He cried over his own decision. What level of narcissism is it for you to weigh in on something and then cry at the words that you wrote? Like, that's incredible to me. And then the last thing I'll say is the thing that bothered me the most was, again, very excited to see Trinidad Chambliss play, but watching two lawyers go into a U.S. court of law and say, well, Carson Beck, I mean, he hasn't even been in classes he's not even taking classes. And then the other lawyer go, for 2 years. Because it's something they saw or heard on social media and Twitter. That part to me was like, that part was such a fucking joke. And it was kind of a microcosm of the whole thing. Because it was like, if we're not going to take this seriously, and you're not going to do enough research to try to take this seriously, I mean, that's pathetic. And so the eligibility part of it for me was like having to see so many people not understand that if you are playing football, if you're playing sports in college, you have to be enrolled in at least 12 hours of classes during that semester. That is point blank period. You don't have to pass all the classes. Like, when I played, we had a bunch of JUCO kids that couldn't spell their names on our team. And what they would do is in the spring during the season, they wouldn't go to class at all. They would all have GPAs between 0 and 1, not exaggerating. And then in the fall, they were ineligible. But in the fall, they would get their GPA up. They would go to class. And then that way, they were eligible for the spring. You have to be enrolled in classes to be eligible to play college sports. So the Carson Beck thing to me was crazy.
We have, you've been compared to Joe Pesci in the comments.
I look paler than normal.
And also,
they're shout scared. Out. What's more, up, Cameron Vaughn?
Didn't know Haley Joe Osmond was such a football.
Love it. Mark's head.
Wait. You bring up a fascinating point that I had never even considered. So if you're going to argue, hey, he's got all this money on the table, but you're the one giving him the money.
Right.
Like, what if they decide to give him $10 million? Does he have twice as likely of a chance of being, you know, accepted? I mean, it's illogical, isn't it?
That Kool-Aid. How the fuck do you spell Kool-Aid that incorrectly? I don't know if giving him even more money makes any difference. Like, because again,
Maybe he's got $10 million on the line, you know?
Maybe you're right. It seems dumb to me because it's like, okay, well, I'm having a hard time even getting the words to wrap my head around how stupid this whole thing is, because it's like you're going to court to say, hey, this kid can miss out on millions of dollars. And then, like, the follow-up question is, okay, where's he getting the billions of dollars? Oh, from my buddy. He also is a big Ole Miss fan, and he's going to be – me and him, we pitched in a little bit of it, but, I mean, it's going to him. And the whole thing is such a farce. I saw Emily Powell brought this up. Of course, she's an Auburn fan, but it's actually a good point. It's the same shit that Bama did with the Alabama judge, where it's like – that guy, and luckily that guy recused himself, Bama, notably high class and lovers of the law and rules of the sport. They want to abide by that because they're good people. But I think that guy recusing himself was the right thing to do, because this whole thing is such a farce. It's so bizarre to me. It's honestly bizarre to me that they're even carrying it out in the court of law, because it's like, again, whenever I'm trying to argue with anybody, I'm not always right. I make mistakes all the time. You've seen me try to spell Carolina before. It can be a disgrace.
Carolina.
But like, if I'm arguing with someone, like I did with Ari Wasserman, which I hope we talk about, I like to at least have like the factual information in front of me. So I don't I can be wrong. I don't want to be stupid and make it a assumptive guess on something I'm not educated on beforehand. I could be wrong. I don't want to be ignorant. And watching these people go into a U.S. court of law and be like, well, Carson Beck hasn't gone to class in 2 years. That was crazy to me. Just fucking crazy to me. They allow that to happen.
Right.
Yeah. Well, this is also a good point. Hold on. Cameron Vaughn, my arch nemesis in the comments, says they couldn't afford to let a pro player come back to college. That was way more egregious than any of the other shit we've seen with Joey Aguilar or with Trinidad Chambliss. Like, I can't believe that was ever brought up, because it's like, oh, he left college to go pro and now he wants to come back to college. Like, is it a different school? No. It's the same one. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. We should definitely look into that. See if this guy can come back.
Well, and I don't know how much if you watched into the Joey Aguilar court case, because it was not as homerific, I didn't think. Pride. But he was getting... not him, but his attorney was getting peppered with, well, what is the value of a quarterback? What is a market value? And they couldn't tell him, because they could say what Tennessee's willing to pay him, I guess. But you know, Lane Kiffin's not going to offer up what LSU's paying, and on. All these are undisclosed, so that could be a sticking point for Joey Aguilar. Do you think he should get his eighth year of eligibility?
Is it 8 years?
Yes.
I mean,
JUCO doesn't count.
So that's the other thing. Is it you and I that had this conversation where I lost my mind talking about JUCO?
Yeah.
When I was, it was, when I was like, it's junior college. It's
two words.
It's two words. The second word is college. I mean, like, I don't know what we're doing at this point. So, I mean, so and hold on. I'm reading this comment from Martid, who had some really unfriendly things to say about me earlier. And I also, just to be clear, I look great right now. So fuck off. This thing is a giant shit show, but the NCAA is inconsistent and incompetent. Schools are rewarded for taking it in their own hands. Everything he said is unlike what he said about my looks earlier. This is actually factual, and I agree with him. I agree with what he's saying. I think that the Joey Aguilar thing, it was refreshing to see some, like, the adult in the room be like, which also could have been Joey Aguilar because he's fucking 30. But to see the attorney be like, listen, that guy was in, he's awesome. My kids love him. He has a home here for life, like, blah, blah, blah. But, like, we can't, somebody has to make a, like there has to be a precedent set or a line in the sand at some point. Cause, like, you are fucking over a lot of high school kids. And I don't mean, that's probably there's poor phrasing on that with the Epstein list, but, like, also fucking over the future of a lot of kids. And that is really upsetting to watch. Like, and I think partially, Mike, it's upsetting because we've been so used, like, that used to be such a fun part of college football, was like, oh man, they got these recruits coming in and you know, maybe they don't play right away, but there's 2 and 3 years down the road, they've developed and they're going to start, and, like, all that kind of stuff. We're seeing a 3-star kid that ends up being, like, a really good player, like, down the line for you after he develops. Like, you don't see that as much anymore because everything is so, like, you know, like, instant gratification and constantly putting band-aids over stuff that coaches didn't do a good enough job of. Like, that's what I didn't have a big fear of this when it first happened. I was like, well, whoever has the most money is just going to be spending it and whatever. And that's just where we are now. Cause it's everything feels like the Yankees in baseball and, like, 20 years ago, where it's like, well, if you have some deficiencies on this team, just go buy someone. And that's what you're doing now. And it kind of sucks because if that is going to make the rest of college football even more difficult, I think, I hate to use this word, but, like, penetrate if you are one of the teams on the outside looking in. There you go.
All right. So let me ask you this then, because nothing you said there was inaccurate. And I'm not one of these people. I've mocked every time they say it, but they're like, we got to get Congress to help us.
That's fucking, I'm going to get canceled.
And I'm not saying that is the solution, but I think it's obvious that these colleges and these administrators and on and on and on, they can't even control themselves.
No,
because all they do is skate the rules to their advantage. And we're seeing it at Ole Miss, at Tennessee, at Alabama. And we've seen it literally everywhere in the SEC.
Yeah.
And so who is going to control this? And again, it shouldn't be the government. It shouldn't be Congress. But there's got to be a – and if it's not the commissioner who works for the conference programs, it's not – he's not going to screw them over. So I don't know how they fix this. The only thing, Chris, and I've heard this, is there – people are actively trying to break all of this,
yeah,
to force it to get to collective bargaining or whatever the solution is to fix it.
I do not think this is why Nate Oates did what he did at all. But what happened at Bama is a really, really good thing for the rest of college sports, because it's this whole thing with the G League players. I mean, dude, like, I think it's dumb that Bediako left college. I said this to you last week. He left college. The cool thing about NIL now is, like, if you don't have to leave just to go get a paycheck, you can do that in college. So whoever told him to go pro, and then, you know, that was bad advice, and he followed it. And actions have consequences, right? Like, it's like, you, that has to still be a thing. Like, otherwise you're not going to learn lessons in general, but especially if you're in these positions. And so, like, I think that ended up being a good thing. There's a kid playing for Baylor right now who didn't play in college. He was just a G League player, but was drafted in the same draft that Bediako tried to enter. And now you have a kid who visited Maryland this weekend, who's trying to come back. He's like 25 and played. Like, you have a kid that's trying to get to UCLA that played in the actual NBA. Like, all this is so fucking dumb. I think basketball has been way more corrupt for so long that they are able to find more loopholes right away. I think with football, I don't know what the answer is. I guess my bigger question, Mike, is because I getting the government involved is never the answer at all. Just ask Waco. Just ask everybody that's ever had to pay their taxes. I'm just how to phrase this.
Were you January 6th?
On the Capitol steps. No, I'm very anti more government being involved, because the government is so fucking corrupt with everything they do anyway. And I know we got some congressmen in the chat. I know every week we talk to a few of those state senators over there. But the,
we have had Congress people reach out to be on the show.
Have them on. I want to be there.
I told them, hell no, I don't do that.
I mean, well, that's amazing because they probably were supposed to actually be at fucking work that day. They just don't actually have jobs that they care enough about to actually go follow through and show up for their actual job, which is fucking infuriating. But anyway, so I don't know what that is. I think the bigger question for me is everyone keeps talking about, well, Nick Saban would know how to do. He'd be a great commissioner. Get a commissioner. And then it's like, well, dude, Saban's 74. Like how many, like, do you want someone that in the 2 or 3 years, maybe a little bit more outdated with the way that they think about stuff? Like who would it be? That's a lot of power for one person to have. You have to also figure out a way that it can't have somebody with ties to a certain conference because the people, the outcry for bias and stuff like that, that'll happen. I think my biggest question is how much further down the road are we going to go with this before we've hit like rock bottom? We're like, okay, that's enough. Cause I feel like we've already hit it. And we just keep finding new ways to be even dumber than before. It's tough to do. And it is maybe Ari Wasserman should be the commissioner then, because he fits right into that mold. But like, I don't understand how much further we can get like off the rails than we already are until someone's like, okay, enough is enough. And again, dude, the NCAA is the governing body. They just don't have enough fucking balls anymore or power to be like, you know, it's like they bullied people for years and years. And then, or like the college football was like their little brother for forever. And then that kid came back from summer camp and hit a growth spurt and was like, you're not going to talk to me like that anymore. It's like, what the fuck? What is this to do now? Like, and they just took their ball and went home. It's terrible.
All right. Well, hey, you are really fascinating me here with this Ari Wasserman. So we'll get to that in a little bit, but I let's swing it back to football for the love of God.
I ride my bike to work with training wheels.
With Trinidad now in fold for Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Are they legitimate national championship or playoff contenders? I don't know if that's the same question or not, but you know, basically how much does this raise the ceiling for Ole Miss next year?
I mean, it has to raise it pretty high. Are those their national title odds?
It's been updated. It's closer to 20-1 now. This was pre-Trinidad. I told the audience, I said, jump on this now because he's going to be eligible. Then the Oklahoma people were like, you're fucking stupid. It's Oklahoma all the way. I was like, okay.
You didn't set the numbers though. You just put the graphic together. I don't understand. Right.
And I said, jump on this now, but
right.
Well, that was all last week.
Shit. No, I think, hold on. This is a work text. I think motherfucker. Okay. I think they should have a pretty high ceiling. Obviously my bigger question for them is, I mean, is 9-3 going to be? I don't get it. I don't. It's just you two making the joke and laughing like a couple of fucking idiots.
I like it.
Yeah, it's fair. Thanks, Mike. Never mind. You three. My bad. LSU, I think, is a loss. Texas on the road is a loss. Cameron, that makes you sound dumb. And then the other question I would have is, because I don't know if Georgia's a win. And I think I said this last week, that loss, or they're going to get a loss between Georgia and Oklahoma, I think. And so, can you navigate the rest of the schedule? Because 9-3 is good with any sort of SEC, all, you know, 9-game conference schedule. 9-3 is a really good record. I don't know if it, like, there's so much mystery to this roster because, like, Keywon Lacy's great. I don't know what they're losing to the NFL draft. They only had, I think, 5 players that got invited to the combine, so it doesn't seem like they've lost a ton of people there. They did really well in the portal for the most part. The exchange rate, I would say, is really good because of the players lost versus who you brought in. But you did lose some of your key players, and Winnie Watkins has gone to LSU. The kid whose name I can't pronounce or spell it off the edge is gone to LSU, and you lost some other guys. I'm excited to see what they look like with Trinidad. The bigger question for me is, you have a first-year head coach who I know did well at the tail end of last season in the playoff. You have a first-year head coach, and you got a new offensive coordinator coming back to figure out how to run and make that offense as successful as it was under Charlie Weiss. If you don't want to give Lane Kiffin the credit, that's totally fine. Like I'm not worried about that. Like I'm not
I don't care enough to have that argument. Charlie Weiss is also gone. So it's just, it's interesting to me because I don't know what they're going to be offensively. The big question for you, Mike, is if they could be decent on offense and they can just have a good defense again, like which is what Pete Golding's calling card is supposed to be, then I would be a lot higher on them. But there's some people in Oxford and around that program that think they're going to be a top five team, which I'm not saying they won't be. I just don't know enough about that roster in comparison to the other ones around the SEC and teams that aren't getting new coordinators and new head coaches to think that they're all of a sudden going to be the best of the entire conference, the best of the bunch.
Yeah, and I referenced this last night talking about Ole Miss. It's so hard to kind of quantify what you're getting out of the transfer portal and how it'll translate in this conference. But Ole Miss, so they've added 13 transfers on defense. Those guys had over 6,000 snaps last year.
Oh, you reading my boy Dog Stats?
No, this is Brad Powers.
God damn it. Okay. I thought it was from Speakeasy Sports.
You showed me that website. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So that's basically what I'm doing right now is kind of compiling where does that rank in the SEC. But basically, point being, over 6,000 snaps last season in the defensive transfer. So does that mean Ole Miss is going to be all world next year? No, but it clearly indicates they got a ton of veterans coming in there to kind of correct that defense. And I think with Pete Golding, there will be more of an emphasis on defense in Oxford.
Yeah, I think, the big question for me, again, is you're losing your two best players off of the defense. But I tell you what, the kid they got from Auburn, former Parkview Panther, so you know he's good. I'm drawing a blank on his name right now because I'm tired. Who's number 24 for Auburn last year? Help me out here, Emily. The defensive back.
The defensive lineman?
No, it's not Caden Lee. He's the one that went to Tennessee. It's the other one.
Right.
But I think he's a top 40 player in the portal overall. He was really good his freshman year. Not Jay something. No, it's not Jay Parker. I don't know how he wasn't as good, obviously, his sophomore season. But he was really good his freshman year. I mean, like they should still be a good football team. And again, they're gonna score a ton of points in Trinidad Jay Crawford, exactly. And Baker, I think, is going to be a good offensive coordinator for them. He was great at East Carolina last year. It's just a lot of change. It's just a lot of change is all. And it's a lot of change with, like when I think of Ole Miss, the two players I think, obviously, that come to mind right off the bat are Trinidad and Kewon Lacy. They're going to be in a new offense this year. What do they have coming back on the offensive line? Because on defense, you lose your two best players overall, and you lose them to a team you didn't want to lose them to. But I think overall, you still get Perkins back, right, at linebacker. You've got a couple other guys off that team from this past season. So, and here's the thing with Ole Miss. They shouldn't have to do this. It seems kind of dumb to think of the team that was they went furthest in the playoff or in the season than any other team in the conference. Best season in program history. But with everything that happened with Kiffin and some of the other stuff with Dabo, like they're going to play with a massive chip on their shoulder and feel like they have, I don't see them getting crept up on by anybody like they did 2 years ago when Kiffin was there with Florida because of how laser focused I think they'll probably have to be.
Right. All right. So, hey, similar question, Tennessee with Joey Aguilar, which he's not been cleared yet. Let's be clear on that. But, I think it's probably even wrong to assume he will, but I think they took a step forward on Friday. So, we'll see, but if he's back, how does that raise the ceiling for this program, if at all, next year?
I thought it read to me that it didn't seem great. If he comes back, you feel a lot better about it because you at least have a proven commodity in the SEC. I think the big thing for Aguilar, and Tennessee fans, of course, got pretty upset with me a couple times this year when I would do my quarterback power rankings. Because the thing about Aguilar that frustrates me is you can call him a gunslinger. You can say he's, got a lot of arm talent or he's takes risks or however you want to phrase it. I don't care. There's too many turnovers and there's too many turnovers in critical spots. Like the game against Georgia, he was awesome. He also had two interceptions in that game. There were some tip balls early on in the season, but you think about the Bama game. I mean, it's a 14-point swing where you throw a pick six going into score on the 1 yard line. It's the second time it's happened in like 5 or 6 years in that rivalry. So
That is, for me, he's got to do better at protecting the football. I do think he equates to two wins, and more so because I think he is good enough to get them to 10 wins. I'm very high on Tennessee this upcoming year, and I'm reluctant to be, because I don't want to be, I mean, I don't think I'll ever be in good graces with Tennessee fans, but I will tell you that I'm very high on them because of Jim Knowles and what they did in the portal with Chaz Coleman and some of the guys they have coming back from there. I'm obviously very high on all the receivers they have there. Even though you lose Brazel, you still have Mike Matthews, a former five-star. You brought in Tristan Keys. And I love the young talent they have at quarterback there too. But I think an unknown that's either a true freshman or a redshirt freshman or a second-year player, at least with George Harold McIntyre III or whatever his white-ass name is, I think that guy, if he's not running for city council, he could be a really good quarterback for them next year. And they're going to have a lot of weapons to throw to, man.
I bet his dad owns a chain of Chick-fil-A's, don't you think?
Context always matters. I said there were tips on those passes earlier about, I'm not saying bad things about Joey. I'll tell you what, take away the two interceptions that Joey Aguilar threw against Georgia. He still had like 9 more on the season, and they were in pretty big spots. But yes, context does matter.
Not his fault. Come on.
I mean, sure, but what about the other ones he threw? That one against Bama was pretty bad, and it was his fault. What's up, Cotton? Yeah, I mean, I think I just am very high on what they can be, and we talked about this last week. I just think that with Heupel's offense, they're going to be very, very good. I think that, like I would rather have an Aguilar than Nico. I would rather have Aguilar than Joe Milton. I think that they have a chance, and again, even if you don't have them, I think it's an 8-win team. I think with Aguilar going into his second year in the SEC, they could be a 10-win team. The big question for me is, dude, it is a track record thing now with him. It's not just what happened with Georgia. It's not just what he did against Bama. He's done this at every stop. I think he's had double digit interceptions in each of his last 3 seasons in the FBS.
None of them were his fault.
Yeah.
He just throws two beautiful balls that can't, you know, I think the receivers just can't believe that he's hitting them, you know?
Yeah. Also, somebody said Marler hates the Vols. Let's be very clear. I don't hate Tennessee. I love Josh Heupel. One of the most pleasant interviews we've done. I think he's fantastic. I think there's a lot of good players there. Neyland seems awesome. The environment seems awesome. I hate Tennessee fans. That's the difference. I like Mike.
You hate Chain?
Payne. There's a couple other ones that are really, really great as well. There's several that I interact with consistently on Twitter that are great. For the most part, though.
Oh.
Let's have an honest conversation about.
Well, you know what I'm honest about, Marler?
Our friends. Your weight.
Well, not that, but what's helping is Take Ultra. Go check them out. This week, TakeUltra.com, promo code
TakeUltra.
SEC. Man, these patches are fantastic.
Yeah. There's
no nicotine, no caffeine. They got nootropics. They're helping me this off season try to. You know what I hate doing more than anything is research, clearly, and data, yeah. and looking up all these damn numbers. The only way I could do it is I pop in a patch of TakeUltra.com, yeah, and use that promo code THATSEC for 15% off, and it doesn't get you high or anything. It just gets you locked in and focused, if you love know what that. I'm saying, to deal with your ass. And then also what I do is I go down to Ridge, or it should be Bruntwork, .com and use that promo code SEC for 10% off. Get you some boots. This hat is Brunt. I wish I could turn it around right now, but they got some. Yeah, okay. Hold on. There we go. We got some Brunt work going on.
When's the last time you showered?
It's been about 6 days.
You don't have to shower with Brunt.
Bruntworkwear.com. Promo code SEC, 10% off. They got the boots. They got the outdoor gear. Go check them out. It helps the show. If you need some Brunt workwear, some Ultra, links in the show notes. Where I've heard that you really need help, Chris, is handling Ari Wasserman.
He sucks so bad.
Please fill me in. I literally have no information on this.
Okay, do you remember 2 years ago? I'll wait till you put your headphones on so you don't miss it. Jesus Christ. Do you remember 2 years ago when the playoff was happening and there was like a core, like 3 or 4 people, like him, Nicole Auerbach, Stuart Mandel, and a couple others that were like the entire length of the playoff that season was just hey, we're going to shit on the SEC. We're going to shit on the SEC. Admittedly, that was annoying to me as a fan of the conference, someone who covers the conference for, like, you know, professionally, all that kind of stuff. It also was like, hey, we got it. We got it. Like, you made the joke already. We totally get it. So in what I've always said too is like, I don't pride myself on being some like big J journalist, right? What do we always say, Mike? Me and you always say this. We got it tattooed on our arms. Big D, small J journalism. And I have no issues with like if you want to go out and start your own show and like not try to be a journalism major, get a degree in that, and then try to be like all hybrid. I think that's stupid. I don't enjoy that. But if you are going to carry yourself as one and work at like places that are also positioning you as one, then you don't sit here and spend this much time trolling certain fans and certain conferences just for your own fucking amusement on social media, and then try to be taken seriously with your takes. And so Ari Wasserman came out with an article about, you know, I think it was like Bama canceling their series against Ohio State, which hasn't happened yet. Like, they haven't canceled the series yet. It was just that he heard Paul Feinbaum say they might cancel the series. First off, if we're writing articles about what Paul Feinbaum said might happen, and I love Paul, was on a show last week, think he's the best. But if we are sitting here having actual like long form written articles about what Paul Feinbaum said might happen, that seems to be like a waste of time at best. Two, the whole thing was based on why would Blue Bloods cancel games against other Blue Bloods? Or if they're scared, if you don't want to play these games, you're worried about how, like, you know, not making the playoff and blah, 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 blah. And it was very much at an angle that was against Alabama and against the SEC. Whether he wants to admit that or not on Twitter, it was, read the article. It's or don't, actually. But it's like very obvious that that was like the main point of it, which was like, this team is scared. And here's, again, my thing. I don't think Bama's going to play that series. It hasn't happened yet, but I don't know why they would, because Alabama is one of four teams in the SEC that for 10 straight years, from now until 2034, they have went out of their way to schedule two non-conference Power Four opponents every year for a fucking decade. They are one of two teams that had, or I'm sorry, one of four teams in the SEC that had done that before the nine-game conference schedule, every year for at least the next 7 years, starting in 2026. The other was Georgia, South Carolina, and Florida. Now, those other three teams all have one thing in common, which is they have a end-of-the-year rival and a non-conference Power Four opponent. So Bama went out of their way. We heard all this stuff. Well, they don't play anybody. And so, all right, we'll start playing all these games at the start of the year in big non-conference games. Well, those are on neutral sites, so that doesn't count. You got to start doing home and homes. Okay, we'll start doing home and homes. They have years where they have Ohio State, Notre Dame, Oklahoma, Arizona, Arizona State, Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech. Like, it's between 8 and 10 teams, and it's two every year for the next fucking decade. Now, that's before Greg Sankey was like, you're right, we should play nine conference games. You're right, let's get bullied into this. So I guess my bigger issue is if we're going to sit here and come at this one specific team, which is what it was, and you look at what the Big Ten has done for the past 3 years. The Big Ten has been brilliant. They have gaslit the SEC and the rest of the country into thinking the SEC doesn't play anybody. Like these eight games shouldn't count. They're playing FCS opponents. I know that is happening because Kurt Cignetti fucking said it into a microphone at the Big Ten Media Days last year. So they did do that. They did do that. So we got to spell DeBoer's name right too. but they were saying this. Indiana's head coach was saying this literally a week before they canceled their opening series or one of their games in this upcoming year against either Louisville or Virginia. I think it was Virginia. And they replaced it with Kennesaw State, who was in their second year at the FBS level. The last three national champions have all come from the Big Ten. There's another thing they have in common, and that is none of them have played a Power Four out-of-conference opponent in their non-conference schedule. That is the fucking blueprint to go win a national championship. But instead of you bringing any of that up in some just fair and objective way, which is what I'm like screaming for, because if we're going to talk about one thing a certain way, let's definitely just talk about the other thing. Let's figure out a balance of all of it, because right now you have this past season, you had the SEC playing eight games, the ACC playing eight games, Big 10 and Big 12 are playing nine. Now, I've heard the argument nonstop how difficult nine conference games is. So now the SEC is going to do that. And then the ACC, some of them are playing nine, some are playing eight. I don't fucking know. Figure out a way that everyone's playing the nine games, because you bitched about it for a decade, even though the Big 10 was the first conference to do it, so they could make more money. It wasn't because the good of the fucking like sport. It's so they could make more money. And then they started bitching about it. They're like, oh, that's unfair. Not everyone else is playing nine conference games. Yeah, not everyone else is a fucking idiot. You guys decided to do it to benefit yourselves, and now you're upset that it's not benefiting you. That's insane. So now everyone's going to play nine games. Now do what the SEC is doing and say, listen, you have to play a 10th Power Four opponent every year. So one of your non-con teams has to be a Power Four opponent. The SEC's already done that. Is the Big Ten doing it? No, they're not. And they're winning national championships because of it. So I don't understand why we have this very weird obsession about one specific conference where it's like it's completely become like an inability to talk about them objectively in comparison to the other conferences. That's the frustration. That's
how tell us how you really feel. Yeah. Okay. So that was an all time tangent by you, but yeah, it's hard to disagree with
question. It. It's not a tangent. Tangent would have been if I went off the rails without you asking the question. It's a rant, not a tangent. Okay. And another thing.
Yeah. I mean, it just, what does it serve them to even play that game anymore? Because I think certainly they were under the impression that the playoff was going to expand.
Right.
And it's,
no, they were not under the impression they were going to nine games.
Right. Well, not without expansion. Does that make sense?
Yes. So Sven Kersberg, this is a perfect example of what I'm saying. Yes, what you're saying is factual. They did not play in a single SEC team, or they played a good schedule. Not a single SEC team would have beaten them. Hate to say it, it's a fact. That's something we have said on this very show.
That's my literally what you just said.
If you are going to ask another conference to play this amount of games because this conference is doing it, and then that conference decides to do it, and you go, oh, by the way, though, we're going to cancel these. Listen, more like a ramble. Absolutely. Okay. It seems like it should be a pretty easy concept to understand. If I came out as a coach and I said, yeah, we're going to play easier games because that's what that conference is doing. And then a week later, I cancel a Power Four opponent for a fucking FCS opponent after making fun of a whole conference for playing FCS opponents, that would be pretty hypocritical at the very least, correct? The answer is yes. I'll answer for you. So my point is, I don't care. Of course, Indiana was better than Bama. They were the best team in the country by far. They were awesome all season. The point is, if we are trying to scream and shout for equality amongst like the actual schedule making around the Power Four, not the FBS, but the Power Four level, you have somehow made like the SEC has taken that step forward. And now the teams that were crying the most or conferences crying the most about it have taken a step back. So how do you make that even across the board? And because the SEC has now become like, I wouldn't say pioneered for it because they didn't do it necessarily like in a willing way. But if Greg Sankey says, all right, we're going to play nine conference games. Also, you have teams like Georgia, Kentucky, Florida, South Carolina. They have a built-in 10th Power Four opponent already. So everyone's going to have to play 10 Power Four games. That is the next iteration of this, where the rest of the Power Four programs around the country in the other three Power Four conferences should also follow suit. They haven't done that, which is annoying, but it's even more annoying because they were the ones crying the loudest about scheduling and scheduling inequity before that.
Gotcha. So why do you care what Ari Wasserman thinks?
I fucking hate it. I just want us to talk about the sport with factual information. That's all I want us to do. And if you're going to be, I say this all the time, if we're going to talk about college football, if we're going to talk about sports, we are going to do it with factual information. And it's weird to me how much this conference, there's an inability to talk about them in an objective standpoint where it's like, well, the strength of schedule is skewed. It's like, okay, well, here's the strength of schedule that was made, not by me, but by the committee that's picking the teams. They seem to agree. It says, well, there's not that. I mean, the SEC just they're so down this year. It's like, all right, here's how many players were drafted. Here's how many were invited to the combine. Here's the recruiting classes. Here's the portal classes. Here, like, I don't understand the level of like being such a mental midget at not being able to talk about this team or this conference or anyone in this conference in an objective way in comparison to the other programs. I think the 20 years that they had, like, watching the SEC win so much and hearing SEC fans like beat their chest, I think it really affected a lot of people way more than I previously assumed.
Right. And then one other thing that I discussed last night, have you considered at all that maybe this is the SEC trying to stick it to the Big Ten, even if just a small part, by if Alabama does back out of the Ohio State series, all of a sudden Fox doesn't have a Alabama-Ohio State game to televise? Because if you look at all those Big Ten team schedules, they only have about like three marketable games.
Yeah, it's awful.
Alabama at Ohio State would be probably, just like Texas, Ohio State was like Fox, one of their biggest games. I would think Alabama, Ohio State would be probably a top two or three game for them all year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's why they're doing it. And here's the thing, too. I've said this forever. The main point here is to win. Like I don't, I these are more fun games for us to watch, but you know what's even more fun than that is winning. Like, it's awesome to watch a huge non-con game. But also, Mike, did that fucking Ohio State-Texas game move you at all? This it was fucking terrible. It was a horrible game. I mean, like, so I think I get the sentiment of it. I think that more than anything, there just needs to be, this goes back to the whole commissioner. You just need to have some sort of equity across the board of like I don't know why it's so far-fetched to say this. There's 12 conference games. Everyone played 9 conference games in their conference. Now, that will open the door for arguments of the 9 conference games in the ACC sure as shit are not the same as the 9 you'd play in the SEC. But if we're already there, everyone play the 9 conference games. Then play a 10th, so you have 3 non-conference games. Play 1 Power 4, play 1 FCS, and play 1 Group of 5. It seems pretty fucking simple. Like, there's 3 games, there's 3 lesser, or 3 divisions of football tiers. Pick one of each. It's pretty simple. Also, I should let it go, but I'm not. Bama Bob 99. Y'all dumbasses realize that the judge replaced the judge who recused himself was an Alabama graduate too. And yes, we do. We brought that up in the entire fucking debate about it this week and last week. I can't do this anymore. I can't explain basic things. Is it us? Am I saying this? I've been watching a lot of Shaw's of Sunset on Bravo. Am I not saying this in English?
I hear you. Well, I think you're, maybe you're coming across as Bad Bunny to that gentleman. Let's address this.
Mike.
Let's address this one from Brandon. Barler, do you think Nick Harbor will have 1,000 yards this season?
No, but I do think that they're going to have a lot better of an offense. I don't think he'll have 1,000 because I think there's going to be other receivers that are going to have really good seasons as well. I don't think 800 is out of the question, but I think they're going to have multiple guys that can get between 500 and 600. Man. That's pretty good.
I need 1,000 from
him. Why'd you put a bet on it?
No, but just to prove you wrong.
I mean, it would be awesome if he did, but I also, as like a, as of someone covering that team or I don't, so this beer belly Bevo obviously doesn't like anything I have to say, but I don't know how fucking stupid you have to be to just not get the basics of what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. But also I highly doubt you're a legal expert. As well.
Beer belly? Come on. He's a
beer belly Bevo? He spelled Bevo wrong. District. He's a Texas fan. He spelled his own fucking mascot's name wrong. But probably a great legal analyst anyway. I think that I would love to see him go off for 1,000. And South Carolina's had these guys in the past, but they have had these, like, they might not have had a ton of production from multiple players at that position, but you've had a guy like either Juice Wells before he left. Xavier Leggett, obviously. Yeah. You had like one guy that's like kind of blown up and been like the guy and wide receiver one for them. I just think they're really, really talented at that position. And some of the players they have, like from last year's team that came in, and one of the more highly regarded and heralded recruiting classes from that the receiver room specifically. You brought in several four stars at the high school level. I believe you only lost one of them. Obviously, Jacobs also left to go to Miami. But the guys you brought in, along with Nitro Tuggle, some of the freshmen, Saquel Patterson's coming in, they've got some dudes in that room that I think are going to be really good, including Sellers' little brother. Jaden Sellers is going to be great.
Yeah, I think you nailed that one.
I've nailed everything I've said, Mike.
Damn it, I had a really... Oh, here it was. So you're in Louisiana now. Mm-hmm. Did you go to this parade thing? And any thoughts on old Lane Kiffin being I don't even know the position, but he was basically in front and center, right? He was on the float, and he just looked awkward as hell greeting fans, which he hates to do all that stuff. But the
watching
LSU
him do this move from... Wild.
The LSU media is eating it up, man. Oh, what a man of the people.
He loves it here. He loves it. No, I think he does. I think he really does. Listen, it's hard not to like Louisiana. It really is. Now, the roads are shit. The governor's crazy. But it's so much fun, Mike. We went to our first parade on Saturday, Spanish Town Parade. Okay.
So what, do they just have parades down there like all every weekend all year long or something?
No, it's Mardi Gras.
Okay. And when does that start and end?
I think it starts January 6th, brother. which we were not here for because we had a separate celebration for something I'm not going to get into, but it's a very important day in my history.
I mean, isn't it like 2 or 3 months or am I crazy?
No, it's like a month. So tomorrow's the last day. Tomorrow is Mardi Gras. And
these
then
damn drugs.
Is Lunagras, which is the Monday of Mardi Gras. I mean, okay. Like school's out. Yes, tomorrow's Fat Tuesday.
Is that what it is?
And then Wednesday is Ash Wednesday when Lent starts. But like,
that's what we call every Tuesday around here. You know,
that's right, brother. Allie's out of town this week. And it's like my health coach is in here. I'm gonna go fucking ham. Dude, all it is, I don't even know how to describe why it's so fun, because it's just, it's a parade, which is kind of,
and they have no regulations, right, on open containers, do they?
You can do anything here. You can, right. Dude, I hung up the phone on my boss the other day, because I was like, hey, there's a cop behind me, I'm driving, and he's like, calls me back, and I was like, what? He's like, as long as you're not in a school zone, they don't care. And I was like, what is happening? Like, you can just do anything. Dude, there's drive-through liquor stores, and they will put us. We went to a drive-through daiquiri place a while back when we first moved here, and we were like, we'll do that. And they're like, well, listen, it's Friday, so it's like Friday doubles. And I was like, that's not even a fucking alliteration. Like, what does that mean? And they were like, well, you can get a double for the same price. You just choose two flavors. And I was like, okay. And so topless women, Emily, and everyone does. And then they're like, well, you could also add another shot for a dollar. And I was like, what is going on? No, Darwin, that was part of the joke, obviously. Thank you. So his cousin Shane's little finger. Do you think he has a little finger? Do you think Shane has a little finger? Jeez. So we went there and it was like, yeah, it's like you can add a shot. So it's like $6 for like, I don't even know how much booze they put in this thing. And then you just take it to go and they hand it to you in a styrofoam cup with a straw. And they're like, just keep the top of the straw lid on it. And then that way you don't get in trouble for having an open container. But the parades itself, like Endymion is what he went to, the parade in New Orleans, the biggest one of the year. It goes, you drive the floats into the fucking Superdome. And then everyone's dressed up, and then it's like a ball afterwards. So it's like grown up prom. Thank you, Rancho. We got to work on the phrasing of that, but I love your taste too. So you drive the float into the parade or into the Superdome, and then they have like a band. So like the band was like Gwen Stefani. It's fucking wild, Mike. Dude, there was a guy. I saw a guy get into a fight. Because he was so drunk, he was wearing a shirt that said, like, it was a straight male, and him and this other guy were fighting, and they were both wearing shirts they had bought that day, And I know that because they were passing them out and it said, eat this pussy. And on the back it said, and munch on this ass. And they were wearing matching shirts while in the fight with each other. It was, it's not a real place, man. It's all, I love it here. It's awesome.
Okay. It sounds like it's your own personal utopia there.
Yeah. You can be whatever you want to be here. Not on January 6th, though.
But will they be a playoff contender or a playoff team? Let's put a line in the sand there. Or are they doing too much drinking?
Marler said, Louise said, wow, Marler was blown away by a drive-through. That's so good. Yeah, are you guys not Gwen Stefani fans? Is that
I like her.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that.
That was fantastic. A pale sheltered chode. Well, I don't love the pale part. I am pale though, I guess it's fine. So with LSU, I don't see how it fails, Mike. I don't see how it fails. You've brought in.
Didn't they say that last year?
I didn't.
After they won the opener, especially?
I definitely thought they were great after they beat Clemson. I did not know that Clemson was so bad. And it's still crazy to me how bad they were offensively with the talent they had there. But bringing it like last year, some of the guys you brought in, it was like you had this crazy talented receiver room. And I'll give you an example of this. Steve Sarkisian said when he first got to Texas that Texas sucked and they would never win a national championship because they're overrated and their fans are dog shit. He said that, not me. Direct quote. No, when he got there, the roster he inherited had, I believe, 23, it was 18 or 23 receivers on the roster. And he was like, what the fuck is this? And they had 8 offensive linemen. And the players you had, like the skill positions last year for LSU were really good. Caden Durham was projected to be the leading rusher in the SEC a year ago. And I didn't see that happening because of how much they threw the ball the year before. But that's what the projection was from Vegas. The receiver room was incredibly deep and talented, and it just didn't work out, partially because Nussmeier was hurt, and Brian Kelly chose to lie about it for most of the year, which was odd to watch it firsthand in practice. And it's like, hey, that guy's hurt for sure. And he's like, no, he's not. He's fine. You're hurt. And I'm like, yeah, emotionally, but not like that's different. And so watching him, throughout that season, but behind that offensive line, you had so much talent at the skill positions, but that offensive line was terrible. I mean, just terrible. So I've told you this before. I don't love the guy they brought in as the offensive line coach just from his track record, but the talent they brought in with Jordan Seaton at one position, you still have some other guys. Solomon Thomas is a guy that was a 5-star out of high school that was injured for most of last year. You've got a couple other guys that they brought in from the portal. Like they did their due diligence there. But the thing I keep bringing up, too, is the most important positions in this sport, quarterback, left tackle, edge rusher, they went out and got the number one ranked player in the portal at all of them. And I'm telling you again, I think that Longstreet kid, the former 5-star that went to was committed to A&M and then went to Southern Cal, him getting so many valuable reps in the spring while Levitt's trying to heal, I think that'll pay off dividends. I think I know for a fact that the Kiffin's offense is not going to fail because it never has. It never, at any level where he's been, it's never failed. And he has finished with a top 13 offense in terms of yards per game, I think, in each of the past 4 or 5 seasons. They've been top 8, I think, in 4 of the 5. I mean, he knows what he's doing offensively. And then you look at the defense, man. And I wrote about this today too, Mike, and I think it'd be interesting to see what your thoughts on it are when I get done talking 7 minutes from now. And that is the balance of having really good players in the portal, but also developing and retaining key players like they did with DJ Pickett, Whit Weeks, Deshaun Spears, who I think would have been one of the top players in the portal, and then also Tre'Davious Green, then bringing in like the freshmen, having those guys develop and figuring out the balance of how to spend that money. I mean, again, that's who they brought in from the portal. They retain Tre'Davious Green, who would have been a top 10 player and it might be the best tight end in college football. Whit Weeks, DJ Pickett. I mean, they've got guys at every level. And then, oh, by the way, the two freshmen they brought in, Richard Anderson, a 5-star defensive lineman, and Lamar Brown. Brown was considered the number one overall player in the country on ESPN. And folks around Louisiana say that Richard Anderson might be the best defensive line prospect they've seen here in the last 20 to 25 years. But that, I mean, that's like maybe since Glenn Dorsey. And that is, I don't see how it fails, man. I don't see how it fails.
any chance that going all in and put, and I mean, I don't even know if that's fair to say they're all in, but $40 million roster allegedly. What happens if it's a failure? I'm not saying a failure,
Mike, but it is a $40 million roster.
Like what if they go 8-4?
That's a failure.
Right. So, I mean, is it fair to be all in year one? I guess that's my biggest issue. We're like, let's say they go 9-3 and don't make the playoff. Are they going to be like, all right, let's run it back with a $45 million run? You know what I mean? It's like,
that's my biggest question. I keep saying is like, I don't know. Like if you pass the hat around and again, this was an $18 million roster a year ago. And it was one of the highest paid we thought in the country.
Right.
$18 million. And they go 7-6 and went to the Texas Bowl for a second straight year. So now you go out and spend 40. I thought they got Seton for around 4 million. I'm pretty sure it was over 5. And, you know, at that point, I think you're just like, whatever. I kept comparing it to Target. Like if you're just trying to get Christmas presents at Target and you're already going to spend $300, what's $350? Like who cares? This portal class cost $40 million, in my opinion, or the roster itself as a whole cost $40 million. I think going into the season, I don't know how you do that 2 years in a row, because this is not Texas Tech, and you still have to pay Brian Kelly, and you're probably going to have to fire your basketball coach, which is going to be $10 million. And like, there's just a lot that goes into it where you have to win this year. You have to win this year, and I think, at the very least, you better make it to the playoff, because that shows that you have like the investment was worth it. But here's the other thing too, Mike. Tre'Davious Green, all those guys I said earlier, that's a junior. Caden Durham came back. I think Harlan Berry is going to be awesome. But Harlan Berry, he's a true sophomore. DJ Pickett's a true sophomore. Longstreet will be a true sophomore this year. But everyone else, like not everyone, but there's so many of these guys that you're bringing in are like Whit Weeks is going to be gone after this year. Right. Like Cooley is going to be gone after this year in the secondary. I believe the other cornerback is going to be gone as well. Like you lose a ton of talent after this season, and you've still got some young guys, but also like, I don't know, like if you don't make this thing work for at least 10 wins, I don't know how you go back to those boosters and ask for more money. Like you have to have a big, big cut.
Yeah, no, I absolutely. But speaking of all in, is anybody more all in than Texas, your favorite?
Dude, they're going to be good. Their fans are shit, but they're going to be really good. I mean, I'm a big believer in Arch. And more than anything, I think they did a good job in the portal at the running back position. That was somewhere where they got gutted in the offseason of all the guys they lost, five players leaving for them. Obviously Cam Coleman, it's like I said with LSU's offense, I think LSU's offense is gonna be good no matter what because they have Kiffin. Same thing with Sark. I mean, I'm a big believer in Sark and always have been, and I think that Manning has he definitely turned a corner last year. Now he had some struggles at times, but he definitely turned a corner last year. And I think that they're going to be in a really, really good position to make the playoff. I think that they're going to be a really complete team. The defense is going to be interesting to me because you've got some dudes on that defense. They've obviously recruited really, really well. They spent a ton of money in the portal as well. But Will Muschamp going back to be the defensive coordinator. I mean, what in fucking 2005 are we talking about right now? So I think it'll be interesting to see what that looks like. I do think that they have enough really, really elite players at certain positions where, Mark, you can make the case that they have the best quarterback in the country. You can make the case they have the best receiver in the country. I know Jeremiah Smith is awesome, but Cam Coleman is also very, very good, and he's going to finally have a quarterback that can throw it to him. And you've just got some guys all over this roster, up and down this roster, that are going to be really, really talented.
Is paying Muschamp $3 million a year, is that a mistake?
They're paying him $3 million a year?
Well, 2.7, and then it goes up to 2.8 and then 2.9. So roughly just under 3 million.
That's a lot of money. But I mean, I just don't like, did the defense take a big enough step back this past year where it was worth firing that guy? Or do you think he did it because of his last name and all the stuff we got going on with Ukraine and Russia still?
I don't know. I think maybe just, you know, he was thinking, we can't beat Georgia. Give me the guy that knows Georgia. Let's run their defense, our offense. I don't know. I mean, they certainly had some breakdowns in the secondary, but I didn't think anything he did cost them many games.
No, and I think the bigger thing too is that what Texas didn't do themselves any favors. By the way, they did not do themselves any favors last year with the. I mean, they still should have made the playoff, dude. That was just like, how the fuck did they lose to Florida? but also, you know what? No, they shouldn't have, because they barely escaped Kentucky and Mississippi State, and probably should have lost both those games, if we're being honest. That Vanderbilt game was not nearly as close. But no, I think the question for me is like Texas fans seems like, or Texas media especially, and everyone last year just really did not seem to understand, like, hey, you guys have not been great consistently for 20 years. Like, you've had some good teams. You are a good program. You have the, like, you know, top five ability to spend of any program in the country. Those are all fair things to say. But the idea that this team that had finally broken through and went back-to-back college football playoff semifinal runs, but then also lost so much fucking talent to the NFL, which they had not been able to really produce that many draft picks over the past like several seasons. Like, to put that many kids, there's like 23 kids in 2 years in the NFL. That's a lot of turnover to have lost. I think that they have gone into this year with a lot more focus and understanding of who they are. And last year just felt like a lot of hype. It just felt like a lot of hype. Now there's a couple decisions they made that I think I'm interested to see what they look like, because you know, I don't know why they let Livingston go, the receiver. I don't think that's going to come back to necessarily bite him or anything. It just didn't seem like from what he said, especially, it didn't seem like it was like the most necessary move to lose him. But again, you have Cam Coleman. You have, it's not even just Smothers. It's the kid you got from Arizona State as well. And here's the big thing too, Mike. You talk about the defense all you want. The offensive line and what they lost from the 2024 season going into last year, especially with Kelvin Banks Jr. going in the top 10 in the NFL draft, you lost a lot of guys up front. And you could talk about how Arch didn't look great, or the defense wasn't up to par, or what the fuck ever. The truth of that team and why it failed was you averaged over 2,400 yards every single year rushing the football since Sark got to Austin. And last year, that number dropped to around like 1,800 in 13 games. Like that is nowhere near. Like, I think their leading rusher had just under 600 yards. Every other guy had over 1,000. Like it was a dramatic fall off, and it made them somewhat one dimensional. And when you have a quarterback, even though he may be immensely talented, like Arch Manning, when you have that level of drop off, and then you have to go out there and do way more on your own without the semblance of a run game, especially what you had the years before, that's a lot of pressure. And it's also, you know, a lot of imbalance on the offense to try to make that go work. And it clearly didn't.
Hey, last thing, updated power rankings. What's the biggest gripe you have on this list here?
LSU at 7. I mean, that's crazy.
Sam Levitt's not, he's not available right now, is he?
Were they playing tomorrow?
That's how this list is done. So yes, they're playing tomorrow.
Fair. No, I don't have Tennessee at 5. Wow.
Joey, baby, he's back. I'm counting him.
Okay. I think 5 through 8 is the most is the most interesting, is what I'll say. I think Texas is too low. I think Carolina should be ahead of Missouri. I don't have a huge gripe with them being outside the top 8, but they're ahead of Missouri. I think that the 5 through 8 thing is going to tell the tale of the entire conference, really, because I just like A&M, man. A&M's offensive line last year had 177 combined starts. That is all but gutted. LSU, there's so many question marks, but there's, you know, you think that you know what you have, but to your point, you came in last year and you had this incredible roster and it performed very poorly. Bama's going to be very interesting just because of everyone they lost, but they also, if either one of those quarterbacks ends up being as good as the coaching staff says they've been, they could be very good. And if they could run the fucking ball, I mean, like if they can figure out a way to run the ball, I do love that you had Georgia at number one because that's where they should be. But yeah, I don't have any huge complaints with this one. I'll tell you what's gonna be interesting, Mike, is Auburn. You know, Golish saying that they spent $30 million on this roster. I think that's gonna be fascinating to see what that translates into.
Well, when did he say that? I missed it.
Oh, he said it like last week. He said that it's a $30 million roster. But then he also, in the same breath, said they were still praying for the offensive line. So it's like, if you're spending $30 million, I mean, that's they were one of the top 15 rosters in the country a year ago, and spent around $25 million, from what I was told. And that number, like, we talked about this last week, man. And I know we're running long, but I don't really care. So the year-over-year thing, you almost have to throw it away from a comparison standpoint because, you know, a couple of years ago, like we said, like when Ohio State won the Natty, it was like, well, that's a $20 million roster. Of course they won. They spent $20 million. Now $20 million is, you know, that's 10 less than this Auburn team self-admittedly, you know, or admittedly spent. And so I think it'll be interesting to see year-over-year with it. Like, I don't think we're going to get to $50 million rosters every year. I think that would be insane. But year-over-year, it's crazy to see how much of an increase you're seeing in spending. Mm-hmm.
Well, hey, we do appreciate Steven up. He's being loyal, even though he doesn't agree with the Alabama rankings.
Showing up for them boys in Tuscaloosa.
Boys.
Steven up. Roll Tide.
Thank you, Steven up. He gifted Brad. Brad, welcome to the family. Anything else before we hop off here?
As an Alabama fan, I love family.
Oh, my God.
All right, Mike. Not together, bye-bye. But let's go shower separately. You have a great day.
Bye-bye. All right, we'll be back with Steven. Same time as always, 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central. Tune in later. Bye-bye.
Hey, buddy. This beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.